And so circle one is an external event that drops in your lap or comes across your desk. And so, for example, let's say you're leading a team meeting and you have an agenda and everyone's, you know, coming in the room, and all of a sudden Joe over here decides to have an angry outburst and kind of complain about something and start yelling. So that's the external event in circle one. And then you actually move to circle three all the way at the end. And circle three represents your ideal outcome. So what do you want to have happen in this circumstance, which is an important step to define. So you might say, okay, Joe's going crazy over here. I want to acknowledge him, but then get this meeting back on track. So that's my ideal outcome, circle three.
I'm Junaid Ahmed, host of Hacks and Hobbies podcast and a digital presence advisor at HumbleZone. This episode is brought to you by Home Studio Mastery. I launched a consultation and course program to help podcasters and course creators to create a space in their homes that'll reduce the friction of creating content and appearing their best when showing up on camera. The pandemic gave us a lot of issues, but this one is here to stay. We're now so much closer to our audience thanks to video becoming more popular and affordable. I help guide folks who want to create Hollywood-worthy studios to not only capture great content, but also build more confidence, more authority, and be more comfortable in front of the camera. If I can do it, you can too. And with my help, you can do it faster. So if you'd like to learn more, visit homestudiomastery.com and how you too can create a home studio that brings out your personality, professionalism, and possibilities.
Thank you for tuning in to Hacks and Hobbies with your host, Junaid. We're visited by our amazing guests coming from all walks of life. We want to learn their story, their struggles, and their journey on how they got to where they are today. So stick around.
In this episode, we have Emily Sander, a writer, speaker, and personal development coach. Emily shares her journey of overcoming adversity, depression, and anxiety to find her purpose and passion. She talks about her experience of writing her first book, The Second Best Thing, which is about finding purpose and joy in life and how it has helped her to inspire and motivate others. Emily also shares some powerful insights on how to overcome limiting beliefs, develop a growth mindset, and create a fulfilling life. So if you're looking for inspiration, motivation, and practical tips to help you live your best life, then this episode is for you. Stay tuned and enjoy the show. So Emily, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So let's take a walk through memory lane. This is our first time meeting, and sometimes it's the first contact that you get to meet somebody and get to learn about, you know, how they got started, going down memory lane, origin story, stuff like that. And I love to, you know, learn a little bit more about you and how you got started. So tell me, Emily, how'd you get started?
Certainly. If we're going origin story, then that goes way back to I was made in Korea and assembled in the USA, which is a cute way of saying I was born in Seoul, South Korea. And then I was adopted as a baby and brought over to the States. And I grew up in lovely, beautiful Seattle, Washington. So that's my way back to my origin story. And then I grew up, I had fantastic parents and family, went to school in Seattle, and then went off into the world. And my career is comprised of mainly technology-based businesses. So some big ones early on, Microsoft, Amazon, and then some very small to medium ones, startups to medium-sized companies. And that's where I really cut my teeth into team management, people management, leadership, and all the rest. But that's a quick highlight reel, but happy to go into anything further.
No, I like that. I like the way you set it up. You know, you're made in Korea, assembled in the US. It's really cool. And you've been coaching for a long amount of time. How did that come into play? I mean, even in the space with tech space, how did coaching become something that you pursued?
I was a coach before I knew what coaching was, to be honest. So in leadership and management, I certainly incorporated any elements of coaching that I kind of knew about. And then when I paired you know, I looked back at a couple roles and a couple companies after they were all said and done. And I said, what is my favorite thing? Mm. What is something that really floats to the top? And is I remember that. I feel fulfilled when I think about that. And it was the one-on-one interactions I would have with people. So it wasn't, you know, did we meet Q4 numbers? It wasn't, you know, how did we do with that one client escalation? It was, hey, I helped, you know, so-and-so get promoted. I helped Jennifer with her confidence. I helped someone feel valued in a team meeting. All of those types of things really stood out for me. And so when I paired that with, oh my gosh, leadership coaching and executive coaching is a thing, I said, that's for me. I'm already doing that. I already am that. So let me go get officially certified and all the proper training and so forth. And now I'm thrilled to be coaching full-time and working with really interesting, dynamic people from all over the world, from different fields, and have, you know, similar themes of issues that pop up for them, but certainly, you know, their own individual scenarios and permutations that are happening.
That makes a lot of sense. When you're in the executive space or running companies or being in part of companies, like you mentioned, startups, there's a lot of leadership required, especially in startups, right? Because a band of developers will come together. Hey, we have this amazing idea. It's gonna rule the world, but you still need that structure. You still need somebody lining them up and you know, creating an execution plan. Hey, if you really want to go from zero to hero, this is the path you got to do. And then as a leader, you're not only telling them what to do, but you're leading them by serving them.
Yeah, absolutely. Servant leadership, I think, is a huge theme, whether you're in a startup or whether you're leading a multinational corporation, having that mentality of I'm here to invest in others and my job is to help others fulfill their potential. Because if you think about it, as a leader, your success is no longer derived from what you can personally do or produce. It's, hey, yeah, how can I leverage my team and get everyone firing on all cylinders? So yes, exactly.
I love it. So take going from the tech startups, the tech giants to the startups, figuring out, hey, this is what I want to do. This is what I really love because I get to work with people and understand from their perspective or be able to see their qualities from the outside. And that's something that a coach really sees it well, because you can never see the label from the inside because, well, you don't even know if you have a label.
Exactly. We all have our blind spots, so we can be as self-aware as we want to be, which is a good thing to try for, but we're always going to have our blind spots. And we also have these internal biases towards ourselves or against ourselves sometimes. And so that outside objective sounding board where, you know, I can say, hey, you know, actually you do really well at X, Y, and Z. And this person might have thought they were the worst at X, Y, and Z. And having someone else say that about them, yeah, you know, kind of triggers a whole different trajectory for their thinking and their career and their life. And so I think certainly as a coach, but anyone listening, you know, speak favor over people, you know, speak things out that you think are taken for granted, but they might not know about them. And that could be a huge aha moment or turning point for them. So certainly for any leader and certainly as a coach, it is all about being that objective sounding board where, hey, let me give you an observation. You can take it or leave it, but yeah, I'm going to reflect to you what I'm hearing or seeing.
What were some of the things that you focused on these startups when you did join them working with the team?
Yeah, so I was part of a 6-person startup, an 11-person startup at one point, and you know, the skill set and the personality that's required for different phases of a business changes as you go along. And so there it's proactiveness, being proactive. It's applying common sense and having a wide range of skill sets. So being able to switch very quickly from task to task to task because you are doing everything from customer service to operations to fixing the server to being the head of janitorial services, all these things fall under your purview. So being able to have a wide swath and scope is important, and being able to roll with that and be very proactive with that. And then maybe later on, you need to specialize in something or focus more on one part of the business. And you mentioned before kind of standardizing things and writing things down. Whereas at initial stages is, well, Emily has it in her head and Ben has it in his head and we know each other. And so we can holler at each other and it works out fine.
No, I like that a lot. And what's beautiful is that through all of these experiences that you had, you wrote a book, which is just really inspiring, you know, Hacking the Executive Leadership. Talk to us about what inspired you or what, you know, what created the need for you to put it all in a book form?
As I was going through my corporate career and certainly through my coaching engagements, these recurring themes would pop up over and over again. So I'd see, you know, different slant, but, you know, same things over and over, and these frameworks that would help people in different scenarios. And I thought, I'm saying this over and over, and it seems to be helping people in lots of different specific scenarios. So wouldn't it be great if I could write some of these down and get them out to a wider audience? And so a book was always in the back of my head, but COVID, to be honest, was the impetus of, okay, now I have a whole bunch of time. Let me, you know, sit down and get all this stuff out of my head onto a paper. So that's how the book came about, but it's a short read. I know people are busy. I'm busy. But I found that the feedback I've gotten is it's a quick read, but it packs a punch, and you'll be able to take a framework away, and apply it that day. And hopefully, for a lot of time to come.
Man, I love it. I'm looking through the book, and there's a really cool framework that you've mentioned in the book that we're going to save for the three hacks to take away, because I think it fits perfectly in the way I run the show. What are some of the aptitudes and attitude buckets that you talk about in the book, and how does it help with team building?
Sure. So it's used in two ways. One is recruiting, so when you're bringing someone new onto the team. And the second one is to assess your existing team. So the two buckets are, as you said, aptitude and attitude. And aptitude are the hard skills or technical skills that you need to know for any given job. So for, you know, technologist, it might be you need to be able to code in a certain language. For finance, you might need to be a CPA or be certified in accounting, something like that. Attitude are the quote unquote soft skills, but equally as important. So my rule of thumb here is, when someone is sent to work with you, do they go, oh no, I have to work with Emily. She knows what she's doing, but she's awful to work with. Or like, oh no, like Emily knows her stuff and she's really nice to work with, and I can work well with her on this project. So, you know, attitude, are you a team player? All those. What you want is team members to excel in both buckets. So if you have someone who excels in both buckets, that's a top performer. And so you want to recognize and reward them for that. If you have a deficit in one bucket, you want to coach and manage to that. And then if you have someone who's in a deficit in both, that's an underperformer, and you need to do something about that as well. So either train them up, get them in a different position, or perhaps exit them from the team. So aptitude and attitude is a great framework to use for recruiting and also assessing an existing team.
You know, I like that a lot. Something that Gary Vaynerchuk says himself, it's easier to fire people than to hire them. So hire as fast as you can and then fire as fast as you can too, because you're going to know if you have a culture fit or not, or a culture clash.
One thing to note on that, sorry to interrupt you, is, if you have all the technical skills, or a candidate with all the technical skills, but they don't have that culture fit and they don't have that team fit, it's a no hire, in my opinion. And so nothing wrong with them and nothing wrong with the organization. That's just, that piece is so important. So you have to look for that. And then, yes, I agree with Gary V saying, you know, I encourage leaders to have an evergreen pipeline for some roles, like always be recruiting for people, because you never know if you're going to get someone great. And even if you can't make an offer, you can still have them in a reservoir to pull from later. And then the final note I'll say here, I love this stuff, is if you do have underperformers, don't ignore that, because your team notices. So someone notices when they're pulling their weight, but the guy or gal right next to them is not, and nothing is happening. So it's your job as a leader and a manager to help that person either come up to snuff or help them find a new opportunity. So action points for both top performers and underperformers.
I like that a lot. And just recently, there's a new article that has been floating around LinkedIn about quiet quitting, quiet quitting. And what do you have, what do you think about that or thoughts around those aspects? Does it show up in...
It's come up, that phrase has come up recently. I think it's happened for some time where people are in their roles and they just, scrape on the bottom and do the minimum they can do, or what can I do to not get fired type of thing. So, I mean, I've honestly seen that mentality in certain people for years and years and years. There's lots of things happening in our job market today that might make that more prevalent. Yeah. But, I think it's always a reflection of the leader and the type of environment you create, not only for the work that's being asked, but also for the transparency and openness of someone to say, hey, like, I'm not, feel like I'm using all my skills here, or, this isn't where I want to be for whatever reason, and have that conversation with a colleague or supervisor or HR, whomever. There's always something that we can do as leaders to help make that a little bit better.
I like that a lot, because it's very important that we are fulfilled. And if you're in a role and you're not feeling fulfilled and you've been there for 5-6 years, well, it's probably time for you to level up or find more challenging position. I like that a lot. Thank you so much. All right. So let's jump into some of the questions that you like to answer. I know PodMatch is a really great platform. They help you be a better guest. They help you be a better host. And I love that, you have an expertise in a specific area. And the reason you became an executive coach or in leadership is because you have a certain passion for it. So I also love the framing that you have got going on behind you. We see greatness, legacy. I can't read the other words, but that very hustle, inspirational.
Yeah.
You got to have the hustle. All right, awesome. How do you go from managing your time to mastering your time?
Yes. So this is a large topic. And what I like to say about this is there's the tactical and practical pieces of this, which are things like block out your calendar and, make a list of priorities for the day, which are all well and fine. I say that kind of derogatory, but I don't mean it that way. Those tools can be helpful. Equally, if not more importantly, are the mental pieces. And so approaching things and your day and your week saying, what are my areas of strength? There are things that we do better than others, all of us. Not good or bad, just we are naturally inclined to doing those versus others. If we spend time in those areas, not only will we get more done, but the work product will be of higher quality. And if we stay in our area of strength and then delegate or automate to our areas of weakness, imagine this. So imagine if you're trying to grind through a project where it's like, I don't know how to do this. I'm bad at it. I hate every second. And then you flip over to a project where you're like, okay, this is pretty good. I like this. You're going to be tired from working on that first project. So the second project that you're good at is going to take you more time. And it's both projects are probably going to be of lower quality. So you've just shot yourself in the foot twice. So instead, find your areas of strength and automate and delegate to your areas of weakness and then play in that space. The second mental piece about mastering your time is your self-talk. And that sounds soft and people guffaw at that, but don't. Hang with me for a second. If you are telling yourself, I'm no good at this, I'm so tired, I'm a loser, I can't do anything right all day long, you're trying to go in a car race and slam on the brakes the whole time. You're literally like working against yourself. So instead, if you have these, what I like to term green light thoughts, which are, I am capable, I'm confident, I can figure things out, I work well with people. You say that to yourself all day long, you're adding fuel. So your foot is on the gas. And so these mental pieces, people often brush aside, but they're so, so important. And you can literally save yourself so much time and so much mental energy and sanity along with that. So that would be my initial short answer to go from managing your time to mastering your time.
I love both of those analogies and both of those advice, because it is so important to manage our time and master it, because we have so little of it. It's something that we don't get back. Like literally, you could be spending thousands of dollars, but it's still not going to equate to the 1 minute that you wasted on something, or the 2 hours you wasted on something that you're not good at. So absolutely manage our time properly so that we are better off for the future.
Yeah. And if I could add one more thing.
Absolutely.
So this is kind of on the practical and tactical side. So this is something I'd highly recommend, is at the end of a work session, make some notes about what you want to work on the next time. Because often people wake up, they open their computer and go, oh my gosh, what am I going to work on? And I have 200 options to choose from. But instead, if you're like, where did I leave off before? Or what were my priorities going into this?
This episode is brought to you by Home Studio Mastery. I launched a consultation and course program to help podcasters and course creators to create a space in their homes.
I love it. Thank you so much.
It'll reduce the friction of creating content.
It's been a lot of fun speaking with you. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back.
The pandemic gave us a lot of issues.
The three hacks to take away.
It's here
also in her book. So
we're now so much closer to our audience thanks to video becoming more popular and affordable.
So hang tight.
I help guide folks who want to create Hollywood-worthy studios to not only capture great content, but also build more confidence, more authority, and be more comfortable in front of the camera. If I can do it, you can too. And with my help, you can do it faster. So if you'd like to learn more, visit homestudiomastery.com and how you too can create a home studio that brings out your personality, professionalism, and possibilities.
Hey guys, welcome back. We've been speaking with Emily Sander. She's amazing. She's an amazing human being. She's the next level coach, because guess what? In life, we're always looking for the next level, and she helps you get to that next level. We've been talking about leadership, time management, how to be a better employee, how to be a better leader. And guess what? She has three hacks to share with us. And these hacks can, you know, you can find in more detail these hacks. She calls them the three circles to making decisions. It's in her book called The Next Level Coach. The book's called Hacking Executive Leadership.
You got it.
So Emily, take it away. Let's hear these three circles.
Sure. So three circles is a framework that you can use to make decisions and make better decisions. So how it works is they're in an equation. So circle one plus circle two equals circle three. And so circle one is an external event that drops in your lap or comes across your desk. And so, for example, let's say you're leading a team meeting and you have an agenda and everyone's, you know, coming in the room, and all of a sudden, Joe over here decides to have an angry outburst and kind of complain about something and start yelling. So that's the external event in circle one. And then you actually move to circle three all the way at the end. And circle three represents your ideal outcome. So what do you want to have happen in this circumstance, which is an important step to define. So you might say, okay, Joe's going crazy over here. I want to acknowledge him, but then get this meeting back on track. So that's my ideal outcome, circle three. And then you reverse engineer. So you go back one step into circle two. And this is where you say, what do I need to do? What do I need to say? Or what do I need to not do or not say in this moment to try to get me the highest likelihood of moving to circle three? Mm-hmm. So it could be something like, you know, hey, Joe, I hear that you're really upset. I see that you're angry about that. We certainly have the budget allocation on the agenda for this meeting. As you know, it takes a full discussion about what's happening in the different business departments. We will absolutely get to that. And I'd love to hear your input when we get to that section of the meeting. And so hopefully that will segue into moving people back on track. But that's a three circles framework and a quick example for you.
And I like that a lot. And I see the practical application of it as well. And you could probably apply it in many different circumstances as well. But I like the way you set it up in the example of a team meeting. And this is something that's always happening, right? It's never a normal meeting. There's always going to be something that somebody is not in line with or approving of that, the main thing happening.
And it's great because it makes you define what you want, which a lot of people just skip over. They have an emotional knee-jerk reaction to something, and that can lead to not fantastic things happening. So if you define what you want, you know the action you need to take and how you need to show up. And sometimes that's not what you feel like doing. So, you know, in that example, I might feel like yelling at Joe, like, hey, Joe, we talked about this 12 times, cool your jets. But the thing to do to get me to circle three is be cool, calm, and collected. So it kind of makes you check yourself before you wreck yourself in this case.
Check yourself before you wreck yourself. I like that reference. That's so cool. So those are the three circles. You're in circle one, something's happening. And then you already have in mind the outcome in circle three. And then circle two is basically how are you going to react to circle one situation to arrive to circle three. I like that. It's almost like a racing analogy. Okay, I need to get gas. I need to make sure that I'm winning the race. But now my tires blow out and I'm running behind a lap. So how do we, I don't know if that didn't really fit, but.
I was going there. Yeah. I never heard it described like that, but that works.
I love it. All right. So now that we have the three hacks in the bag, we've got the origin story down, made in Korea, assembled in USA. I love that. And let's jump into the sixth question I love to ask my guests. Okay. Number one, what is the one hobby that you wish you got into?
I would say learning a language. I would love to speak another language fluently. And obviously you can communicate with people directly and on their own terms, but it also expands your worldview and it expands your way of seeing things. I heard a quote that says, you don't really understand your own language until you learn another. So I always thought about that and go, oh, I'm probably missing something.
Wow. That's really powerful. I hadn't heard of that before. That's really neat. It's really neat. I've tried learning different languages through Duolingo. And I've got through like a little bit of one language, a little bit of another language. But it's always fun to see like the pronunciation and how the grammar is set up, etc.
Yeah, for sure. My friend has a record of like something like 450 days in a row of Latin. So he can't do anything with it, but he knows the roots of a whole bunch of different languages.
Yeah, yeah.
So
that's really cool. All right, next question. What did you want to be when you were a child?
Ooh, I wanted to be a lot of things. I kind of cycled through a lot. I do remember I wanted to be an artist at one time. And then I quickly realized I would do like finger painting in kindergarten. Mm-hmm. And then I realized the circle of people who thought my paintings were good was very small. It mostly included my mom. So I decided that would not be a good career path for me, but I did want to be an artist for a time.
Nice. Well, the beautiful part is that you are creative in other areas and that's, you know, managing teams and bringing people together.
There we go. Thank you.
That. You're welcome. What is your favorite movie or TV show?
That is an impossible question. there's so many. And I love movies. I'm going to go with something recent. I've been rewatching The Crown because Queen Elizabeth II recently passed away. Mm-hmm. And the first two seasons of The Crown are all about her when she first ascended the throne. And she was this young woman who was never expected to be queen. Her uncle abdicated, her father died prematurely. And at 25, she became the monarch of this vast British empire. Winston Churchill was prime minister. And it's how she navigated all of that while trying to maintain a family and all of that. So I love the first two seasons of The Crown.
Nice. Very cool. What movie would you choose if you got to play a character in it?
Ooh. Well, when I was little, I would pretend to be a superhero. So I would watch like a show or something like that. And then I would go and pretend to have superpowers. So probably something like that. I'd probably like be in an Avengers movie. Okay. So I could meet Chris Hemsworth and play around with Thor.
Absolutely.
But that seems like a good group to be a part of.
No, that definitely is a great group to be part of. What they've done together in the past decade is just literally so marvelous.
Yeah.
So on that note, who is your favorite superhero?
Superman. My dad read me comic books for bedtime stories, and I loved Superman. He fights for good, and he doesn't give up, and he's adopted like me. So I always love Superman.
I love that. That's nice, nice. Last question. If you were a board game, what would it be?
No one's ever asked me that before. I've always liked chess. There's chess pieces on the cover of my book. So I always liked kind of the elegance and symbolism of the game, the pieces, the rooks and the knights. And then I like how the king is the most important piece, but it can only move one square. And the queen is the most powerful piece, and she can move, you know, an infinite number of squares in any direction. And so I like the idea and theme of thinking ahead. So thinking steps ahead. And I think the part of your brain that you use during chess is actually called the executive function. So it makes sense that I would like chess. But yeah, if that was a game, I'd be chess.
I love that. That's so awesome. So where can my superpreneurs find you?
My website is nextlevel.coach, nextlevel, all one word, .coach. And you can find me there. I've got some free resources and things to help you out. I'm also on social media, primarily Twitter. So nextlevelemily. And of course, you can find my book, Hacking Executive Leadership. And that's on Amazon and Kindle. There's an Audible version. So whatever format is best for you.
Fantastic. We'll be sure to include those links in the show notes so people can get to them by a click of their button or click of the link or tap of the link, whichever which way they
can. We'll make it easy for you.
We'll make it really easy for you. Yes. Emily, thank you so much for your time and energy and your wisdom. Thank you again. And we'll catch you in the next episode.
Thank you so much.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. We spoke with Emily Sanders. Please check out the episode or check out her links in the show notes, and we'll catch you in the next episode.
Congratulations, you made it to the end of the episode. Thanks so much for listening to our guest on this episode. Please send me an email at Junaid@hacksandhobbies.com to tell me what you loved about our guest today. You could find links mentioned in this episode on the hacksandhobbies.com website.